Yearning to play a few rounds of Gwent. That ought to set me straight.
Welcome to Commander's Horn, episode 34. Today's episode is all about decks with high play rates, cards with high win rates, and everything in between as we welcome Pavel from the Gwent Up Deck Tracker team into the Commander's Horn studio to talk about his work on the project. Too long didn't listen? Stop playing Dagon. We have enough data. All this and a little hidden roach on this episode of Commander's Horn. Great to have you back on Commander's Horn, a weekly Gwent podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Dane McBeard, and I'm joined, as always, by the Grey Bro, Josh. Grey Boxer, how are you this week?
I am fantastic. It's a beautiful day in Pittsburgh, and it's a glorious time of the year. Baseball season has started, and as you guys all know, McBeard and I are huge fans of baseball, even though our favorite teams are performing not so great. But one thing that's been performing pretty well for us is our favorite card game, Gwent. I'm really enjoying Gwent right now. There's a couple of new things that are happening, and we've been playing, I think, a lot of different decks lately, and I don't know, I'm really enjoying my experience right now with Gwent. I've got a couple new Skellige decks cooking, so what are you working on, McBeard?
Yeah, I mean, that's one cool thing about Gwent is that the meta is always shifting, even though nothing has really changed or has been added to it in the last little bit. But you see, you know, things rise in popularity, their counters then rise in popularity, and then the counter to that deck perhaps might rise to popularity. So things will always be shifting, even on the ladder. Nothing really stays stale too long. It's always felt like that, I think, through every patch cycle. And that's actually really important for our guest this week. We are talking to a member of the Gwent Up team. A Gwent Up is a Gwent tracker that people can use to track their stats and the cards in their deck and a bunch of other features as well. It's a pretty cool program. We're going to be joined by Pavel today later on in our guest section. But as far as me, I've been experimenting in some other decks as well. I had a really popular one this week called Hidden Roach, which was a Francesca Scoietel deck that actually uses Dragoons to buff Roach and then tuck Roach back into the deck, in which when a gold card eventually pulls Roach out, Roach is at, like, you know, high teens, 20, early 20s or so, depending on how many times you could flip your Dragoons with your Blue Mountain Commandos. And I think a lot of people didn't know that you could do this with Roach, that Roach would retain the buff when you put it back in the deck. So it kind of took off, and it's just been a lot of fun kind of following people's reactions to Hidden Roach and playing it a little bit myself. That's what I've been up to. But yeah.
That's actually a really fun deck to watch. And what I want to know is especially, you know, with the meta being what it is and your MMR being up there, you know, your experience, you're playing against a lot of the top meta decks right now. And a lot of people are kind of down on Blue Mountain Commandos, saying that they're one of the worst bronze cards for Scoietel right now. Specifically, maybe because Mercs are now relentless and they can't be flipped by the Blue Mountain Commando. So how are you finding it in your deck? Are you able to get full value out of them quite often?
I feel like it's not so bad because it's still you still want to hold your Elven Mercenaries to pull out your first lights, and you generally you can get a Dragoon. I guess the most inconsistent part about it is getting the Dragoons to stick on the board. I think a lot of people are catching on to the fact that if you kill a Dragoon, you can kill, if they're running Blue Mountain Commandos, you essentially kill the functionality of that card as well. The deck also runs Vreed Vanguard, so at the very least, you're spawning another Neophyte, which is good because you are running Aileron as well for some early game power, because you're playing some generally low tempo cards, five strength, four strength bronzes. But, Scoietel finds a way generally to combat, and, you know, Saskia seals the deal with lots of units on the board. So, I mean, in a worst case scenario, sometimes your Blue Mount Commando is what it is, but, I don't know. It's been working here and there. I don't know if I have it tuned very well yet, but some people have been taking it into their hands and adding some different silvers and golds in there. And it's kind of just started like this whole Roach buffing thing. You see Francesca here and there. And every time I see Francesca now, I'm thinking, where's Roach? Why is Roach not coming out?
And I think that Francesca is one of those underrated leaders, so it's good to see you bringing Francesca back.
Yeah, people like that stuff, I think. Mm-hmm. Keeping it fresh, keeping it real. But yeah, that's what I've been up to. So just so you know, folks, this episode of Commander's Horn is recorded on Sunday and Monday, and we'll be posting on Wednesday. You can find Commander's Horn on iTunes, Stitcher, and other podcasting apps. Always nice to hear what the Gwent community has to say about the game. And thanks so much for reaching out to us for our last question. We'll be talking about it later in this podcast, what your favorite artwork in Gwent was. But we'd like to ask another question for our next mail call. So we wanted to talk to the real Witcher fans, the fans of the games and the books. What Gwent card do you feel has the best lore to in-game representation, I guess? Like, for example, I'll use my favorite example really quickly, like Bloody Baron summoning the Botchling or the Lubberkin. I think that that is so great as far as from a lore standpoint. So stuff like that. Do you have a favorite lore representation in Gwent? Let us know. Send your emails to commandershornpodcast@gmail.com or tweet at us anytime at commandershorn.
Commander's Horn, as always, is supported by our commandos, our patrons over at patreon.com/commandershorn. Thanks to everyone for helping us make the best content we can.
So we have a great guest, Pavel, is joining us from Gwent Up, and specifically my favorite aspect of Gwent Up and trackers in general is the data collection. I've always been a bit of a stats nerd. I'm a baseball fan, as hard as that can be sometimes, and I've worked with, you know, Excel in my day. I take great interest in knowing kind of holistically what's happening, and when you have data and a metagame to look at, you can kind of draw your own conclusions. You can see trends, and card games have a lot of confirmation bias. When you think something happens frequently or all the time, it may actually only be happening 25% of the time. Like when RNG effects are negative all the time, or your deck is unbeatable, or that you never draw a card you need. But when you look at data, the numbers never lie. And that's my favorite thing about stats.
One of the things that I learned growing up was there's three types of lies. Lies, damned lies, and statistics, McBeard. But really, we've got Pavel on the show, and he's got over 200,000 individual Gwent matches that he's drawn data from, and these are legitimate statistics, and I can't wait to get into that interview. But first, talking about myself and how I've dealt with trackers, basically being in you know being in the closed beta since the beginning, and seeing Gwent Tracker start, the creation of Buffy, the first tracker out there. At first, I was very much against trackers. I thought that they provided an unfair advantage. An unfair competitive advantage, even. And I think that this was a very unpopular opinion. I was sort of waiting for CD Projekt Red's official word on whether or not it was even legal to have this mod, if they were going to ban people for using it. And it turns out they never did. And I didn't really enjoy, like, seeing that other people gained competitive advantage over other people by using them. But at the end of the day, as they got more popular, everyone started using them, so they were no longer really a competitive advantage. And so they were, I think, unfair back when they were brand new. But now, since they've become a staple, I mean, I use Gwent Tracker, and I've recently become enamored with Gwent Up for, you know, the same reason as McBeard. I'm a stats nerd, baby.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's kind of a lot of this is coming of age stuff when it comes to a card game. You know, it starts with kind of meta building opinions, and then net decking and polarizing opinions about net decking, and then trackers come in and there's polarizing opinions about that as well. And soon there's going to be polarizing opinions on pricing, content, new card ideas. I'm sure it all happens. So we're just kind of seeing it all unfold in front of us in the closed beta. But right now we want to bring in Pavel from Gwent Up. We have a really great discussion about the work that they do over at Gwent Up, how they gather that information and how they look at it in order to tell a lot of great stories about the metagame and how it's evolving. Also, there's a lot of great stuff about play rates and win rates for various factions and cards. We know you're going to enjoy it. Join us after the break here with Pavel, and we'll start talking about Gwent Up.
Spoiler alert, he tells you how to win with King Bran.
Right after this, folks. Joining us in the studio right now is a member of the Gwent Up team, Pavel. Is that how I would pronounce your name, Pavel?
Yeah, Pavel. That's correct.
Pavel, thanks so much for joining us today on the podcast. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine, thanks. Thank you, guys. This will be a very productive meeting.
For sure, yeah, because we've been talking about, Greybox and I have been talking about using Gwent trackers, and I use Gwent up on my stream as well, and Smirk, who is also part of the team over there.
Yeah, he's our marketing director.
The marketing director. Oh, yeah. Okay. So that sounds very professional. He reached out to me the other day and wanted to have a chat. And I think that's a great idea because I want to know more. We want to know more about the Gwent Up project and how did it start? So this is a tracker for Gwent. This is something that can be found online.
Gwentup.com.
Yeah, at Gwentup.com. And it tracks your statistics, your wins and your losses, your leader versus leader stats, as well as keeps track of the stuff in your hand as well. So there's a bunch of applications. So so generally, maybe just talking to the audience, how did Gwentup start and what is the Gwentup project?
It started, I think, maybe in the late January as a product we are planning to do for Gwent, because everyone's here has an idea of the biggest potential of Gwent as a card game, as something really, really attractive to users, because Hearthstone now is going totally random, and this one can, I know, become a cyber sport in some category, like Dota 2, or maybe even better. So it was really interesting to us, first of all, to make a tool which can help people play, like, as an Overwolf ad for Hearthstone, which we are also working sometime earlier. For example, I was an analytic for Overwolf. And now it's... As a plan, it was something that gives you a lot of tools for Gwent, not only tracking, but helping you build in your future decks, or maybe have some idea about what to craft first, or, just simply everything, which will help you... Mm-hmm. I don't know, mate. In every aspect, it can give you some kind of a tool, which will be very useful, like a monster mark right now. But the first thing it was asking us is, what about statistics? What decks are better? And we can't show it to the people right now because our ad is totally anonymous. So if a single player creates a deck which has very high win rate, so it will be totally rude to show it to the people. So we are just making now general statistics, and we are thinking how to share it with people. And the video format was the better idea, I think.
So first of all, I think the video was incredibly interesting. And that's really, I think, I hope that a lot of people who play Gwent and are very interested in not only the top meta decks, but in general, building a deck that's very successful, is able to view Gwent up statistics and take that somewhere. And I think that you said that the video was good for you guys?
Yeah, it was totally fine because this is the first possibility we have to show something, to share with the community. And the next step would be more videos, but they will be about more specific factions, I don't know, leaders, to share more, even more than it was in the first one.
So when we're talking about the video, just for everybody listening, we will have a link in the show notes. Basically, the data that's been collected from Gwentup was produced into a video with Pavel here as the star of the video. They're talking about how in the last few weeks Squayatel has risen to power, and then Dagon combats that by being a very hard to beat deck and a good matchup for Bruver Hoog, and how Dagon is currently a top ladder pick right now, which is giving rise to Henselth. And that basically the data that has been collected by all of the players that are using Gwentup right now tells a story about how certain decks are rising to power and then are then coming down in power as the counters become more and more prevalent to them. And it's a great video, so check it out in the show notes. And there's some other things that were talked about here, like the monster mark. It's one part of the Gwentup tracker that shows the passive keep for monsters when you are playing against them or as them. And just wanted to have that information out there for everybody. So you've been looking at the data for these for this 200,000 games. What can you tell us? Can you tell us any insight coming up? Maybe over the next week, like what's coming into popularity?
Yeah, the main idea of our next videos and all the materials we'll be giving away is be ready for Yennefer. Yeah, be ready. It's absolutely amazing. The results it shown us, it was something, I don't know, out of my mind. Yennefer, personally with Unicorn. Unicorn
right.
gives you more than 70% win rate. Personally, Unicorn.
I find that so interesting because Henselt generally makes his side of the board all gold and uses the Cryonex to weaken your side of the board a lot. So I find it very interesting that Unicorn is actually showing a higher win rate.
Yeah. This was also very interesting because Unicorn has 2 times less frequency than Cryonex, but has a bigger win rate.
Wow, that's incredible.
I like that.
I can't believe that, because I feel like every time we see it, it's almost very often being used as the buffing agent, and it's used with Siege Towers and Henselt, and we know Henselt, as we talked about, is a very popular and powerful deck. A 70% win rate out of one card is pretty intense. I think that's definitely that's something we think everybody wants to know. So
yeah. Were there any other standout cards?
Our standout cards? Okay, for example, Borg, or Villain Threat of Merit, is something which is has... I don't know, let's say, has win rate very good in, I don't know, all the matchups, but not being on the Henselt deck has 35% win rate. But on the Henselt deck, it has something like 60%. That's something really outrageous. Karen, personally, has bigger win rate than all the Dagon plays in game, as it is right now. So there are a lot of outstanding cards, but the list is really short, so it's just maybe one or two combinations for each leader, and all the other cards are totally trash. And for example, Ragnarok, which was changed, now it doesn't give weather, but it gives you 8 shots for 2 base damage. No, am I right? So
yeah, that's right.
This is the most useless card in the game right now.
As in, it's not used.
Cards. It's it was it, it I don't know, it was used really frequently, but it's the most useless card, really absolute trash. Wow. It just ruins your game. It's in every deck, it just ruins your game. It's drawing your win rate, I don't know, to 40%, even if you have a good deck and you're using it, so you're just losing. So I don't know why do developers change it, but it was okay before, but now it's just ruins your win rate totally.
Okay, so very close to my heart, Pavel, is Geralt Igni.
Geralt Igni,
yeah. Can you elucidate here?
Very interesting question, because this is the most popular golden card in the game right now from all other cards. And for example, Geralt in the low-ranked and unranked games is picked 40% times. So Geralt is in 40% of all the decks in the game right now, which were played, from these 200,000 matchups. But it has a good win rate only in unranked. For example, from 3 to 4K, it has nearly 50%, but people just learning how to play against him. Win rate drops dramatically after 4K. It's something about 40%, as Ragnarok. Yeah, you know? So,
yeah. Wow, yeah.
It becomes one trash card after 4K. But really good in a ranked. Yeah.
That's so eye-opening, because I put him in so many decks, and I play cards around him to get more value out of him. I try to line up a giant Igni play, and it seems like there might be better choices.
Yeah.
I think part of it might have to be, I found that when I've been playing Northern Realms, Full Test or Henselt, the trebuchets are very popular, right? The reinforced trebuchets.
Yeah.
So the reinforced trebuchets, it's the most popular card.
Wow. On the Northern Realms, all the Northern Realms, trebuchet is the most popular card.
I believe that. I think that any Northern Realms deck is probably playing that card. And that card staggers all the strength of your opponent's board because it's pinging every turn. So Geralt Igni has a harder time finding a lineup So maybe he's being used less, or maybe because trebuchets are so popular, Girl Igni is just worse because of that. I don't know if that's a crazy thing to say, but...
Northern Realms, let's say, they are very popular on unranked plays. For example, for newcomers, because it's the first deck you are available to play. But later, they are not very popular, and Foltest and Henselt played less in 4K+, for example. Redivit is played much more, and Redivit got better results, I should say. Redivit doesn't use trebuchets, so I cannot say about how good they are on top of the leaderboard. But before it, yeah, this is one very popular, plus people are playing against Gerald Igni, for example, just putting 90 points of power on the line, so you just cannot use it, it will burn nothing. So the more rank it is, the more people play just against, knowing that you possibly can have it. And just because it's very popular, you should be ready for a Gerald Igni every time. So the main idea is to play it as you can. So just, you see there is more than 20 power on the line, just play it. Don't think about that you can, oh my god, I can burn 30 points of damage or all the trebuchets in one line. No. Just, there are two trebuchets and more than 20 power, burn them. Just burn them. It should be played more than 20, more than 12 base power. 4 on the Gerald himself, so he should burn at least 9 points of damage. So 13 is okay, because base power is 12, and it's just Gerald, which is given you freely in the beginning of the game. So if he plays less than simple Gerald, why should you pick Gerald Igni? Yeah?
It's a very good point, and it's an interesting point you made about Radovid rising into power. I think because monsters are probably bigger now than Skoytel, you have a lot more targets to lock and deal with, whereas in Skoytel, I guess there weren't really a lot of options. They try to control you, and they don't put a lot of really worthwhile targets to lock on the board.
Talking about Radovid, in my calculations, I use some of the data which I theoretically made as a base, you know? For example, base bronze card power is 8 points. I think you can understand this, because in every deck there is a simple bronze card with just 8 power and nothing else. No weather immunity, I don't know, no damage done. 8 base power for a bronze card, 10 base power for a silver card, and 12 base power for a golden card. So, the next thing to think is how many points cost leader's power. I made some calculations. It should be nearly 11 points to be okay. And Redivit totally does it. He makes 3 shots for 2 damage, so at least it's just simply 6 damage in a bad occasion. But also it blocks one target at least. Also you can block even 3 targets. And the value will be really enormous. So now his ability is best from all the Northern Realms, plus you can use Northern Realms card. As a monster, you can't use, I don't know, Shiny or Bloody Baron. And this makes Redivit really one very useful right now, because people on high rating, they're playing around abilities. You know, monsters are devouring their creatures, raising in power very fast. You cannot do a lot about it. They are not controlled by weather, because they mostly are played on Dagon, and Dagon can use clear skies on every moon he would like to. So, very hard to play against this. Ragnarok doesn't give you a lot of weather right now. So, it was good in the pre-update, I think, where clear skies didn't clear all the weather, but only one on the row. Now, it, as usual, clears all the weather, and it's a big problem. So, Redivit is really cool, and that's why I can talk about trebuchets. Yeah, because he doesn't use them.
Wow. Can I ask one more? Because I think that one of the ones we've talked about a lot on this show, specifically, especially as it's gone through separate iterations and from its first time being announced, is Dimeridium Shackles.
Dimeridium Shackles. Oh, that's a cool one. This was my second research from all the cards. The research was which is better for Skoytels. In most, I don't know, more than 80% of decks, There's a mixture of abilities like Manticore Venom, Azul Thunder, and Dimitrium Shackles. So, personally, I was very curious about which one is better. Maybe you should, I don't know, take three Manticore Venoms or three Dimitrium Shackles. It would be much nicer. But I must say, Dimitrium Shackles are pretty bad, been pretty bad right now. Because there are more situations than you use them for zero than situations when you really can block something that your opponent doesn't wait for it, okay? So, and Manticore Venom is a little bit, just for 0.2% better than Alzur in all the matchups. But it's very specific card, you know? There should be the condition of good usage of Manticore Venom is much harder than Alzur. So, the best card from three is Manticore, then Alzur, then Dimitrium Shackles. And you can play Dimitrium Shackles well only in something like 45% of all the matches. So, not very good card. Radovid is okay, because he also deals some damage, but not Shackles. Shackles do nothing in most situations. So, yeah, not very good card right now.
Well, there you have it, folks.
There you have it. So I think that maybe I just have one more question for you, because we've talked kind of a roundabout way a lot about all of the factions. We didn't really mention a lot about Skelligar and Nilfgaard, because I imagine that you haven't seen a lot of those matchups. Do you yeah. have any insight as to like why those matchups are so bad, especially Nilfgaard? Really not that common on the ladder.
That's a really awful situation with Nilfgaard. First of all, there is no Nilfgaard right now in the high-ranked group. Amhir was played 3 times from 10,000 matchups in high ranked. 3 times.
Oh, wow.
From 10,000 games. 3. Yeah. And he lost 2 of them. And one was a draw. He even didn't win a single game in 10,000 matches. You know how bad the situation is? Not a single one. How bad can it be, really? But there's Morvran Voorhees. Morvran Voorhees, he's a little bit popular, not really, something about 2% of all matches on high ranked. He can do something, but why is Nilfgaard so bad? Because Nilfgaard is an awesome, really awesome faction when there is no weather meta right now. If there was no weather at all right now, it would be the best faction to play, because it has the biggest base power from all the other factions. It has some really good mechanics which other factions doesn't get, really, like mangonels, like just showing the cards, you know, lots of spies. But spies are not very cool in this meta. This is one you should know. Think about Nilfgaard. Second of all, base power is nothing in this meta, because the only thing you should do is buffing your minions, or just playing against effects, different effects, or just, I don't know, burning all the enemy units. So now the best win rate got the decks who can shoot, I don't know, just not only with Manticore Venom, but with the creatures, I don't know, with another effects, with their leader ability. Nilfgaard doesn't shoot at all, only Amhir got his mangonels, but so, the only thing they have now is really big base power, but it's nothing in this meta. So, it's really unpopular. The only good deck among this all is Legendary, which kills all the spies on the enemy's part of the
Meno Cohorn.
Meno, yeah.
Yeah, the only deck is good which has it, okay? Then you are giving your enemy a lot of power, and then you are not taking it back, but just killing it. And this one is really good. It has more than 50% win rate. And everything else, all the Nilfgaard decks are totally losing to Hanzeld in most occasions, more than 80% situations. They are quite a lot of using even to Bruvahoog, which is not the best deck, let's say, but also 60% win rate for Bruvahoog against all the Nilfgaard factions. We can say about Amhir, okay, they're only three games, so the statistics would be wrong. But other two, okay, they're also losing. And they can do nothing about Dagon, so they're always losing against Dagon. It's they're losing in 77 77% situations. And there was, with Dagon, more than 3,000 matches. So, really big statistics, and it's really showing that Nidavgard can't do anything in this meta. But there are two good decks for Skellige. Because, first of all, they have Harald, somebody who is shooting, he's shooting well. And this is the main trick about the new meta. Who is shooting is winning. That's simple. And Harald, who can buff his units with shooting, he is very okay right now. And Axeman, Tursurge Axeman, mm-hmm. Am I wrong? They are called this
one? No, that's right.
Yeah. Okay, Tursurge Axeman is a best winning deck in 4K+, for example, for now. The only Skellige deck which has good win rate on 4K+, but deck on Tursurge Axeman with Wild Boar of the Sea is a really, really good deck right now. And another way is King Bran with his ability to have tons of base power with one card in the third round. With a big... I don't know how this deck was called. A big girl, some kind of this.
Oh, the Queen's Guards?
Yeah, Queen's Guards.
big girls.
Big girls, yeah. classical deck, yeah. It also works, but very, very hard conditions. You always gotta win first round, and it's quite hard with Skellige because they got no power in first round. And that's a problem. But if you are winning first round, then you are winning the game. That's something you gotta mention when you are playing Bran. Krahan Krait is okay, but you should play on Warcrys, and Warcrys showing themselves not really good card for top of the matchmaking rating. They are really good before 4K, but afterwards there are too many Dagons, too many Jills. You are just okay. You have your ability, which gives you something about 12 or maybe 14 right now. Don't remember how many.
16 health. Actually for Croc.
16 for both eight. Both eight. Oh my god.
They're both eight
right now. But this is only 16 power, which can be blocked with weather to 2 points. Okay? And Dagon can choose the line where to use weather. And let's say all other leaders who are good on 4K give you more. Then Krahan Krait. That's why he's not very frequent leader. It's less than 2% in the average. But in the 4K plus, he played just 200 games and win rate is not very cool. But Harald and Harald on Tursurge Axeman can be played, and King Bran also can be played. But it takes a lot of skill to play him. Not just simply building a good deck, but it's always you should always remember how to play, and you got to win first round. And this is okay. Let's say not the simplest condition to play. So well, this is how it goes.
Let me ask you this then, because it seems that you're able to parse out the data of who won a match if they won or lost the first round.
Yeah, we can count this. So, the first question when you get here have this data is to find a way to understand who is winning more frequently, who goes first or who goes second. Because for Hearthstone, it's quite easy to understand that going first is, okay, let's say, it's a big thing to go first. But in Gwent, you would prefer, in most occasions, play second. Because you are closing the first round, you can choose how many card advantage you would get, or how many cards can you lose to win the first round. This was the most interesting information. But I can say you clearly right now, because it's these statistics are very close to what leader you play. So it's the main thing to understand. So we can understand who goes first, and what round do you prefer to win the game? Yeah, these statistics are also taken. And this is the first step to make match history.
Yeah, this is crazy because I would love, we, one of the things we talk about a lot just generally on our Discord server and amongst each other as players is how important is round one really? I mean, we've seen the meta shift to a position where round one is fought tooth and nail, sometimes to the final cards. And can you tell us sort of overarching for the meta decks, what is the win rate of a deck after it wins the first round?
Sorry, but I can tell you this because this depends on what leader do you play. So I got a
Bran.
For Bran? Oh.
Yeah, because you talked about that.
Yeah, that's quite easy. See. Okay, let's say Bran wins 68% when he wins first round.
Wow.
That's high enough, I think. Yeah.
And let's just say that maybe other decks have similar stats, up and down percentages, I'm sure, but that's dominant. That's saying, listen, if you're playing Bran and you want to win, you must win the first round.
Yeah.
Build your deck around being able to win the first round.
Yeah, that's why Hjalmar is the best card for King Bran right now. Most winning card, yeah. Because it's the only golden card which gives you a lot of base power just as it is, and else you can have 10 more if you are shooting, and you are shooting playing Skellig always.
So aggressive Bran, huh? Aggressive,
yeah,
Bran.
Aggressive Bran. Aggressive Bran is very good. Kambi is not very good, but aggressive Bran itself, yeah, it's quite good. Okay, I will make a research for this point, but something similar is about Skoyatel. Not mentioning Francesca because she has some possibilities to play, but she's really too weak, measuring her with another two leaders, like Bruvahug or Itlin or Eitne. Sorry, I can mix the things because when I'm having my statistics, I don't see the name of the card. I see only its ID. In numbers.
It's like the Matrix, it's, man. You just
see
numbers.
For me, it's all like numbers. I am thinking about special version of Gwent Up where all the cards would be calling as their IDs. So I won't be picturing them. So the idea is I don't have concrete statistics for Francesca because not many matchups on high ranked. But now there is a deck for Francesca which is showing itself pretty good. So where will be more matchups, I will say how good she is.
What deck is that? But I'm just curious.
We'll let people draw their own conclusions.
I posted something on Reddit about Francesca a couple days ago. I don't know if you started seeing it just like 2 or 3 days ago. Is that when you saw it?
This was the main object to look for is Emher and Francesca, because they are not played totally. But I was really curious, why is that so? Is it a really big deal to make a deck for them? And Emher is... even now, there is no deck for him. But Francesca, there was... a deck was found. And I think it was found after the video. Because I said, nobody is playing. And people was just thinking, oh my god, nobody is playing. I will make this deck. And they tried Emher, but they lost everything. But Francesca, there appeared to be a deck. But okay, our privacy politics show us that I can say this concrete deck. Because only two people are playing with it. I got no nicknames, but I see that one has... they have 23 similar cards, but there's two different decks, but they are pretty same, but it's not cool. It's not anonymous.
So don't, you don't have to do anything like that.
Yeah, but there is a good Francesca deck. There is a good Francesca deck right now. It has, let's say, more than 60% win rate, and it's a great deal more than 60% win rate. That's how it goes. And okay. For Skoyatel, it's also, they are very depending on winning or losing first round. Mm-hmm. And when you asked it, it's good for Eitne and Bruvahug to win first round, but for this Francesca, it is really more okay to lose it than to win. This occasional Francesca deck prefers to lose first round. Yeah,
prefers to lose first round.
Prefers to lose first round, yeah.
Wow.
So you can play around it, trying to find this deck, yeah. But there is a deck which is good for top of the leaderboard. maybe you will be one to be the first on the leaderboard right now.
I don't know. I want to put all my resources into Francesca's dad, my hidden roach deck now. I feel like I missed something.
So we'll have more statistics on it. So thank you. It will be very nice.
Awesome. And I mean, I guess obviously we talked about monsters. We know, like, based on your video before, we know that Dagon is just super popular right now, and that Dagon's kind of the deck to beat, I imagine, for the most part. So the decks that are beating Dagon are the ones that are probably getting more popular.
Yeah, there are, for Dagon, there are two archetypes which, I don't know, perform more than average. Let's say more than average, because there are so many people playing Dagon right now that half of the games are mirror matchups, for example, for 4K+. So it's quite a common thing to play Dagon versus Dagon or Dagon versus Jills, or vice versa. The win rate would be nearly like 50%, nearly above 50%. But Devourian archetype is much better than simple weather archetype. Weather loses more because on high ranked, for example, you are playing against Henselt. Henselt is not really worth depending. You can make Euro gold and afterwards buff and other units. Bronze 4, which takes 2 green power with every golden unit. For example, this is not weather
dependent. Reinforced siege tower.
Yeah, reinforcement tower. Yeah, so it's this card is against weather totally. So weather archetype is not so good. It's average win rate, not measuring Dagon versus Dagon or Dagon versus Jill against everybody else, is lower than simply devouring monsters. Yeah, so devouring monsters are the most winning from all the monster other decks. Yeah, that's correct.
You know, this has been a great podcast for me because I've just been listening, and it's been like this. I guess I didn't realize the breadth of information that you were able to provide, and this has been like incredibly insightful and very, very interesting. And it's been our absolute pleasure having you on the podcast today. Thanks. We're gonna put everything in, and yeah, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. Josh, do you have anything else you wanted to follow up with?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, Pavel, it's been really great having you here in the Commander's Horn Studios. And if you don't know, we do a weekly audio podcast where we want to know what you think of the Commander's Horn Studios. Could you describe them for our audio listeners?
Okay, so the question is actually like an imaginary, like we're not actually in a studio, but... how do you imagine the studio looking?
Well, just a simple commentating studio for a baseball match. I don't know.
Oh, that's great. We love it? That. Oh, we love baseball, so that actually works for us. So, no, it's just a fun question we ask all of our guests. So thanks for humoring us.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure having you, Pavel, and we hope the best for Gwent Up in the future. And guys, if you haven't checked them out, gwentup.com, and be contributing to the win rates and the statistics of the entire Gwent community. It's huge.
Yeah, thanks a lot, you guys. So need some information, you can for your future podcasts, you can always ask. So it would be a pleasure to share some information with you. So hope to meet you again one day.
Yeah, absolutely. Great talking to you. And yeah, if we ever have any questions, we'll reach out. And good to know you. Great resource for info. Oh, that was almost mind-blowing. That was almost mind-blowing, the amount of information that he has. And to think that as time goes on, only more information will be gathered. I want to talk to him again. I want to talk to him again about that stuff. What do you think?
Yeah, legitimately nice guys. Really, you know, and they've been sending nice direct messages to us and everything, and they seem to want to collaborate in the future as well. So we're hoping that this is something that will continue to be something we can share with you, is these awesome stats and the sweet and smooth sounds of Pavel's voice.
We have some emails to go through this week. We asked everybody out there in the Commander Sworn audience what your favorite card art is, and Alex R. answered the call. He has his top three favorite pieces of art. Let's talk about these, Gray Boxer. His number three piece of art is Aglaze. I like Aglaze very much. I think that there's a lot of cool stuff going on in this particular piece of art. I think it's got a great kind of scene. The way the water is dancing around her foot, a little bit of magic going on. You know, it's good. It's very well done, obviously. It looks good. What do you think about Aglaze? I'm sure we've seen her enough.
Yeah, she's a scantily clad dryad. Kind of hard to not be happy with that. But no, I think that this is a great pick. And it's... you know, it might be from a faction that I'm not a huge fan of at the moment, but this is a card that I can't wait to see the final form of the premium version, because we've been waiting for that for a while. And I know there's been some sort of premium leaks for Aglaze, but really, until we see the CD Projekt Red version, I'm going to be excited to see that.
Yeah, there are some premium versions that have floated around, and I don't know how they start floating, but glimpses of the future can be seen, and Aglaze was one of those. Second one is a premium that we do have access to, and that is Vernon Roach, and I like this one a lot as well. I think it tells the story, especially when you kind of line it up with Yorveth's premium. Yorveth is shooting the arrow, and the arrow is hitting the tree that Vernon Roach is standing near, so it's kind of got that story between the two of them, how they're rivals. And I also like the fact that, you know, he's when you click on the card and you look at it, it's like he turns around and he greets you. He's got that very iconic hat. He's got that very iconic dress, that Blue Stripes Commando. It's just, you know, it's exactly what I would want out of a card like that. It's not just him standing. There's action. I love it.
Let's take a moment and think about, why does Vernon Roach wear that hat? And second of all, what is that hat?
Because what is that hat?
And it's kind of a scarf. It's kind of a... what is it? It doesn't have any armor, I don't think, unless there's like an iron skull cap underneath. It seems to serve no purpose except to keep the heat off of him, except he is in Temeria. So it's the Northern Realm, so it's not that warm. So why does he wear this silly hat? But talking about the premium card, I actually, this for me was not one of my favorites. When it was revealed on the live stream a few months ago, I was kind of like, okay, all right, he's getting... you know, almost hit with an arrow. Okay, he looks startled. And then I discovered that this is, you know, this is a scene from Witcher 2. Like, that's not the path that I took. So I don't believe that, or if it is something that you can see just playing through the game, I don't remember it. But realizing that it was an integral part of a rather climactic scene in Witcher 2 is kind of cool. And I like the flavor of it, even if I'm not like super into the art itself.
Mm-hmm. And Alex's number one pick for best art in the game is Nithril. Now, I wouldn't pick this as my number one pick, but I will say that it's an excellent rendition of this particular boss in Wild Hunt, Witcher 3, that is. And, you know, I think it's pretty good. I mean, it clearly shows that he has... he's not your average Wild Hunt warrior. There's a lot going on there. There's the blue, there's the Frost Quen sort of spell that he has for himself. This letter ends abruptly because we had a small audio issue with the podcast. So very sorry about that. We missed Gray Boxer's take on Nithril, but he liked it. He thinks it's a good piece of art, of course. So let's just transition into the farewells. Thanks for understanding, folks. Thanks to Pavel from Gwentup. And just thanks everybody for listening. Once again, you can find us on Twitter at Commander's Horn, and you can email us at commandershornpodcast@gmail.com. Again, we're asking you, what is your favorite lore relation to a Gwent card? What Gwent card do you feel fits the lore that it's based around the best? Be sure to once again email us at commandershornpodcast@gmail.com and let us know.
And you can find me, Greyboxer, at GreyboxerGwent on Twitter. You can find me on YouTube, and you can find me on Twitch as Greyboxer. Just a note for my YouTube subscribers, we do have a new episode of Gwent Folktales coming out this week. We're talking Barclay Elves. Where can you be found, McBeard?
I can be found at McBeardCH on Twitter, McBearded on Twitch, and McBeard on YouTube. I've been trying to put out a video every day. I've been almost meeting that. Yesterday I missed it, but I think I've been going strong for the past 5 days, and I got one coming out, As soon as we're done this recording, actually, it should be up before the podcast. And, you know, I'm just trying to get a lot of videos out there and stream as much as I can. Even though I've been having some internet issues, it's not getting me down. I will be much more prevalent very soon. But, yeah, that's where I can be found. And really, everybody, thanks so much for joining us today.
So until next time, this is Gray Boxer.
And this is McBeard.
Best of luck.
On the path.